Hi, John.
Hey, Alex. Hey,
you know what I hate?
What's that?
Nothing about what you're about to say.
Oh, Stitcher Premium, it's great. I want to take a second to recommend some podcasts that are on there along with ours, but these ones are available only on Stitcher Premium, including In Voorhees We Trust with Gourley and Rust, Paul Rust and Matt Gourley, often on the old Comedy Bing Bong. Very funny guys, and I'm a fan of the Friday the 13th series, so it's great to listen to them talk about it.
Are you?
I mean, they're fun.
Okay,
yeah. Fair enough. They're not like, no, this is deep stuff. No, I enjoy it.
And then even the first one when it's his mom?
Yeah, that's what it's great.
All right, what about the second one where he's Baghead?
That's the best Jason. Is Baghead Jason, I find personally, the creepiest.
What about the one where that other guy finds a hockey mask and then somehow turns
okay,
into Jason?
Okay, we don't need to talk about that.
Really?
Yeah.
What about that one where he's in Manhattan and punches the guy's head off?
Yes, that's great.
Okay.
What is wrong with what I... That sounds fantastic. What did you just... What's wrong
what
with what
What about
you
the
just
one
said?
Where he's in space and beats that lady to death while she's in a sleeping
Again,
bag?
Again, are you hearing yourself?
I am. I've just decided to... You know, you ever heard the term turn into the skid?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be an 8-minute ad.
Right. No, absolutely.
I'm gonna make Comedy Bang Bang look breezy in comparison to how long this fucking Stitcher read's going to go.
Thank you. And the people of Stitcher, thank you.
God, we're giving them more time.
Yeah, no, it's great.
I mean,
and we get paid extra money for it.
Exactly. If they sign up using promo code STUFF at stitcherpremium.com.
Yeah. Promo code STUFF. It gets you a free month and access to a bunch of great content like Teacher's Lounge and with special guest Lauren Lapkus, among so much else. Stand specials, tons of archives of such stand-up specials. Sign up using a promo code STUFF. Go to stitcherpremium.com.
Promo code STUFF.
Tell them John and Alex sent you.
Well, that's how you tell them, is promo code stuff.
Yeah. Well, also you can say it to the computer.
Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What's that?
I'm not really sure. Talk about an unexpected virtue of ignorance, a.k.a. Birdman.
It's better than pot. It's better than booze. A shot of applause will stamp out the blues. You work till you're dead. It ain't for the bread. Call me out of my head.
So let's start off here. I did not see them cut during this movie. Obviously they did cut at times. But, like, boy, they did a good job of faking it being one long take.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's specific things that, you know, are cut, like the shots at the beginning and, like, the shots towards the end when you see the jellyfish on the beach and the...
Oh, yeah, no, I meant, like, the ones that are meant to be.
They do a good job with it through, like, CG blending, something like that. The movie is supposed to be one long take. And, yeah, there's parts where you can go, well, obviously that was the case. That, you know, you can kind of tell where they were trying to fake it. The camera points up at the sky, and then it becomes night, and then it pans back down.
Yeah, there's one, like, really dark hallway shot, which I just assume was, okay, that's
yeah,
them.
But, like, fine. You know, it's kind of like... Like watching a ventriloquist act and really paying attention to the guy's lips. Like who cares? Like it's fine. Like it's great. It's very well done. And it adds so much to the movie. I might have mentioned this on the podcast before that I'm kind of getting tired of long takes because I think they're increasingly easier to do with the sort of mobility of cameras and the rigs and whatever.
Yeah.
And there's cases like the one that always comes to mind that made me go, man, I think I'm done with this is the most recent James Bond movie, not Skyfall.
Quantum of Solace?
No, that's the best one. At the beginning, he does this, he's in like Mexico City and there's this huge parade going on and it follows him as he goes through this parade. He's got a mask on and then he like climbs this thing, goes up to him. It's very impressively done. Technically, it's very impressively done, but it's just there to be like, virtuoso. It's just like, look at this, everybody. And I think this, although it sort of, it has that sort of element of like, can we do this seemingly all in one take? It really, I think, works well for the story. And also the way it's done, I think, combined with the soundtrack largely just being sort of jazz drums, makes it feel much more improvised and immediate.
Yeah.
When really like, this is a immense technical achievement. I mean, we were talking during Batman, during The Dark Knight, you were impressed at Heath Ledger kicking open a door while talking. And in this movie, apparently these people would have to, the actors would have to go through like upwards of 15 pages of dialogue and hit very certain marks.
Oh yeah. No, this was super on that Heath Ledger kicking the door thing. the shot in this where they he lands later in the film. He lands in front of the theater, and then the cabbie rolls up, gets out of the car, and follows him in. I'm like, the fucking timing. It's dumb timing. It's just an AD standing there going 3, 2, 1, cab, go, get out. But just the orchestration of just those little things were so impressive to me.
Yeah.
However,
Sorry.
I agree with you that it works for this film, but only in that it screens a very weak movie. Like, if this wasn't done with a kind of gimmicky long take thing, this movie would really show its colors of being not particularly good.
Oh, see, I disagree. I think there's a lot there that's great, but I think you can't. I mean, obviously, if it was done worse, it'd be a worse movie. Like, yes, that's a given. But
no,
I think,
no, but not worse. What I mean to say is that it needed it. It is a gimmick to hide. It is varnish. It's the true coat.
I disagree because I don't think it is a gimmick. I think it's intrinsic to the story that's being told. I think if it was sold more that way, I guess like that. If it's like done in 3D, that kind of thing. Mm. But I think it's creating that feeling, and those sort of space relationships and the way it all is tightly compressed in this backstage area, I think is part of the movie.
Yeah, I get. I don't know. To me, it felt like a way to get away with a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense about the film. And not the magical realism part. Like, I literally am an author of magical realism. Like, I'm so okay with that world.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the character relationships, like there's stuff that if this was done in a more traditional filmmaking style, you would have a second. And unfortunately, we do a show where we're forced to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a second to think about it, like, this is dumb. Like,
right.
Like, the film critic angle makes no fucking sense at all. Oh, sorry, the theater critic angle. Mm. Not no sense, but like very little sense.
Well, that's just as more just the push pull of the theater versus film thing.
Yeah, but if the movie isn't done in this frenetic style, you'd have a second to think like, oh, that doesn't make sense. The daughter relationship doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. The ex-wife doesn't make a lot of sense. Most of the backstage stuff, but because it's done in this one take, you don't get a chance to actually like experience them. You're kind of tricked into thinking there's more there, and maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I guess.
To me, I find that, I don't know, I find that bullshit. I find that artificy.
What I'm struggling with here is that I don't see it that as a separate thing. Like I don't see what the way you're describing it to me makes it sound like they added that later. You know what I mean? Like, and I think this was an interpretation of this material.
Yeah.
That you can't remove that from the whole. I think, you know, in the same way that you could talk about, I guess, like, if you've ever seen Steven Soderbergh's The Limey, like he took a really kind of like bleh script, like a B-movie script, and changed it all, like essentially through the editing. And famously, in the DVD commentary, the writer is yelling at him about that the entire time.
Oh, you've mentioned that before.
Yeah. So perhaps that's kind of what you're getting at, is that by doing that, stuff, it's this sleight of hand that makes a pretty weak script better. Is that
essentially? Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I'm saying. It just, I suppose, like, yeah, for the amount of effort that's put, like, there's almost two things going on here. It's like, I wish there was a better script because the way this was made was so articulate and fun. And like, I like the long take. Like, I think it's really well done. But it's like, I wish it was well done over a movie that was also good. I know I'm wording that weird. Over a script that was also good. Over like better bones to have this flesh on it, where it just feels like this is like, oh, well, this is how we can make this not very deep piece seem deep.
So I disagree. I think there's so much there. I don't know. I mean, well, I guess we'll find out more when we talk about it, but
I don't know. I guess I'm just, maybe it's just the stuff I read and I'm into, but like the two different worlds operating kind of thing is just like, this is easy. Like, it's just, oh wow. And you're using it over the backdrop of a stage. Like, it just seems like this has been done a million times before. I mean, they make a joke out of it in the one part where the guy's giving the speech from Shakespeare, which I forget which one it is, the Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
Macbeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't know. It's almost like, this is like everything I liked about La La Land, this didn't land. Where it's like, the artifice of this just felt artificy. While that one, I'm like, oh, you did such a good job having the artifice there. Mm-hmm. This one, it's like, eh, you know. And also, and this is, people are going to fucking string me up on my toes on this one, but I think Michael Keaton wasn't the right choice for the lead.
Hmm. Why do you say that?
He has too much dignity. Like, I wanted more of like a...
Have you seen Multiplicity?
I have.
What? Well, okay, now, we're going to stand by that statement.
If it's fourth level clone... No, but like, I would... Not that I don't like this movie nearly as much as everybody else, but in a kind of Glengarry, Glenn Ross, who's the lead? Jack Lemmon?
Mm-hmm.
The real pathetic guy? Like, he has no dignity in that movie. Like, mm-hmm. he just comes, like, it's... But Michael Keaton, I guess, just has gravitas. Like, he's just like, I just feel like it's not the right actor to... I didn't buy him
so
in
you want,
the...
So you want Gil from The Simpsons?
Not that bad. But, like, I just... It felt like he had... I don't know. I didn't buy the 20 years since you were popularness to him. Like it just, he doesn't feel washed up enough. Like there's just, his back's too straight. You know what I'm saying? Like he doesn't, cause I mean, the point of the piece is he's trying to find meaning in something.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't seem like he's looking for meaning. Like, he seems pretty goddamn confident. Like, it's just because it's Michael Keaton carries this weight.
I guess, but that's Michael Keaton. Like, Keaton's kind of had a similar sort of thing. Like, he hasn't been popular in a really long time. I mean, like, not just the Batman thing, but like, I don't know what you want to see here.
I want to see somebody that, I want to see that feeling. Not just knowing, like, if I didn't know Michael Keaton's story, and I don't even think Michael Keaton has that story, like... Yeah, he was.
That's what I'm saying.
No, but I would like to see it acted. Like, I want him to act, not just.
Yeah, but I mean,
not
I guess,
just go. Oh, well, because my life is vaguely similar to this, I'm bringing this to the role.
Yeah,
like,
but I don't. I guess. Okay. Again, what I'm missing here.
I want
here,
better acting, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Like I didn't have that same issue because I thought like this is a guy that believes in himself like to a fault, like is has a lot of hubris, is really self-centered, and whatever. So I don't necessarily see him being that outwardly pathetic.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that would, I don't know, he just doesn't carry it. Like, the whole arguing with his previous self in his head, like, it just doesn't, I don't know, I don't think Michael Caine did enough. Like, he's too...
What did you want him to do?
Act.
That's, yeah, he did.
Oh, I don't know. I
guess I don't know what your definition of acting is.
Yeah.
Is it the Dr. Zoidberg's grandpa of, like, wave your arms around and throw a pie? No.
Like, there's a, there's like an acting technique. They say like, don't do anything. Like, and then the show an actor's face and that's like pensive, blah, blah, blah. And it's the same face, but you bring it.
The Kuleshov effect.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. We talked about it before.
Oh yeah. But I felt like I'm going to remember, especially something you said on the show, but I think Michael Keaton just brings too much Michael Keaton. I don't know. I don't feel like this is a good casting. Like I thought everybody else was really well casted. Fucking Ed Norton. I thought knocked it out of the park.
He's great, yeah.
Yeah, like especially, and 9/10 of his performance is how wonderful his hair is. That is some fucking great hair.
It's pretty good,
his
yeah.
His daughter is wonderful, and that's La La Land Lady, right?
Yeah, it's Emma Stone.
Yes. Mandy was great in it.
Yeah.
Which I was like, so excited to see Mandy.
She, between this, Andrea Riseborough, between this, Mandy, and The Death of Stalin, like three fantastically different performances, and it took me a second to realize that that's who that was.
Yeah, me too.
She is so good.
There's one kind of quarter profile shot of her. I went, is that? Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I had to pause and be like, oh, shit, that is Mandy.
Yeah.
Like, this is. Yeah. So just going back to the McQueen thing, I just think, you know, obviously, it's like later Brando where people would just cast him because he's Brando, where it's like, well, it doesn't matter if he fits the role or not. It's like, no, he brings gravitas. Or like current Pacino or current, you know, any of those like kind of great actors where I'm not saying Michael Keaton's on that level. Actually, I think Michael Keaton's a damn fine actor. Mm-hmm. I feel like they casted him because, you know, X number of years ago, he was Batman.
Well, I mean, obviously there's some, you know, meta stuff there, but I think it's funny because going back and looking at some of the stuff that written about this movie when it came out is that I almost think, that's to its detriment because there was so much focus on that element of it, of like that read of it. It's like, well, he's this washed up Batman guy. And I'm like, well, I think it's about more than just that. Like, that's just the vehicle for this. And yeah, there's this fun meta thing, but there's so much of that art versus popular culture, theater versus movies kind of thing.
Yeah.
That I very much enjoyed. And I think that was a part of it, but I think some people kind of overshadowed that with like, oh my God, he was in Batman.
Yeah. And there's also a little too much I mean, it's what you just said. I think there's a little bit too much on the nose stuff about that.
Yeah, like the fact that like it was 1992 exactly. And you know, whatever. Yeah, a little bit, sure.
Yeah.
Well, the original ending that that I heard they were going to do, but they couldn't make this happen, is that it was going to end with basically the play being a hit.
Oh.
And he's like, and the Pirates of the Caribbean is like, why are we doing this, mate, or whatever. But they obviously couldn't get Johnny Depp and couldn't get the rights to the Pirates of the Caribbean because Johnny Depp was probably like, no, I like money. I don't want to do this. I don't want to make fun of the thing that's giving me billions of dollars.
Well, one, that would have been awesome. Two, okay, there's three things I have in my mind. Two, real quick. They got the rights to Spider-Man, though, which is weird. Is that the same parent company? What? How did that happen? Is this Sony?
No, I don't know who made this, but like Spider-Man and Bumblebee. Guys in costumes as such.
Yeah. But I, you know what I just realized? What I want is I want Bryan Cranston season 2 Breaking Bad level of acting. We're not saying like this great acting, but like he had this great level where he hit the level between pathetic and strong of like over. Cause I mean, that's the character Walter White is, this overconfident, but also schlubby. Like there was like, he had like that. That's what I'm looking for. I know that's not the best way to word it.
No,
but
I get what you're saying.
Like was missing in Michael Keaton's performance.
But I just don't think Michael Keaton's character is schlubby. I don't think he's.
No, I don't mean that. I'm sorry. Not to say that he should bring the schlub. What I'm saying is like where there's like kind of the multiple levels operating. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel anything of coming from Michael Keaton in that. It felt too, I don't know, it was yeoman-like.
Hmm. That's fascinating because I really enjoyed him this and I thought he hit those notes very well for me.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm trying to think of a movie you like, but I don't, but I couldn't think of one. So let's just leave it there.
Done and done.
The problem is the movie I always go to is fucking Buckaroo Banzai, but I'm very fond of that movie. So it's like, I
like Short Circuit too, but you know,
the one with Los Locos?
Yes.
No, sorry, I like that movie too. Los Locos, they'll kick your balls into outer space.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway from that movie. Generally across the board, I really like the performances. And in fact, some of the performances, how bad the play gets, I thought the play like is and then gets better as the movie kind of progresses. Yeah. Like the one guy at the beginning who gets hit in the head with the light.
Yeah.
Like how good he is at bad acting.
Yeah.
Like it's not this it's bad, but it's a very specific kind of bad. Like people have told you you're good kind of bad.
Yeah.
It's really good.
That was a really, really well done little bit of business. Cause that's so hard to land. Cause that's been done before in movies, obviously, where you're trying to be a bad actor and it becomes so like, but four through light window breaks. It's East. James Elliott is a son.
Yeah.
But no, he does like, he's like bad at acting, but he's like, you know, maybe in another take, he could get it.
Like, right. And just how theatery some of this shit, like, and the dialogue in the play is very theatery. That kind of just overwrought nonsense.
Yeah. I like some of the writing in the movie, the overdramatic, our lead characters overdramatic, like, especially the daughter. What's her name?
Emma Stone?
No, I mean in the movie.
Sam.
Sam is a theater kid, or they just wrote her that where she's everything she says is over dramatic. Mm-hmm. Like just, you know, this is such a good counterpiece to La La Land. Like it's like very similar. And I thought that was well done. Like those kind of counterpoints.
Well, it's sort of like La La Land is how theater kids view themselves. And this is kind of how theater kids are.
Yeah.
Fuck you, theater kids.
Yeah. Fucking theater kids.
Also,
why would you spit on that bald guy's head? Fuck you, lady. I don't care if you've had drug problems. That's just some guy trying to make his way through fucking life.
Through the world today. It takes everything he's got.
Yeah. It's like just trying to take a break from all his worries. And sure, would help a lot.
If
you
didn't spit on his head.
But no, you got spit on your head by some fucking 10 that's hanging out with another 10 with wonderful hair.
Yeah.
His hair
it's nice hair.
Glorious, John.
Yeah.
That is glorious hair.
Well, I don't know why his hair makes me think of this, but he does have this very kind of commanding performance in it. And I do like... he's a guy that to me like kind of plays that range in this where when he's with Emma Stone, he's completely different than when he is in basically every other aspect of this play of his life. And I thought that was very interesting. And I thought he managed those fluctuations very well. of being kind of like vulnerable, of being this like rapey asshole and being this like, I'm an art guy. Like, I love the scene where he and Michael Keaton break down the scene, like his first time with him. And the way the camera works, and this was something that I was thinking about during it, because there's not editing, how you make up for that and how you like the conversation between Michael Keaton and his wife towards the end, you see him reflected in the mirror talking to her. So you kind of like get this like cut back and forth kind of thing that you normally get in the movie. Or like the way certain camera angles would like stay on a person, then reveal the other person's reaction rather than just like cutting back and forth. But in this scene in particular, it starts more with Michael Keaton, but then as Edward Norton kind of takes over, the camera really like starts focusing more on Edward Norton and what he's doing. And I just liked that like, oh yeah, here's him taking control. And rather than telling that through a series of cuts or just the blocking, I think the camera really did a lot of that work.
Yeah.
And I'm also just a sucker for movies where people are working. And like you see how stuff is done.
Oh,
and so
no,
just that like them breaking down the scene and how that I found that fascinating.
I'm that way as well. Any kind of backstage theater stuff I really enjoy. I love that one fat guy that's just watching Family Guy the whole movie.
Yes, yeah.
Which my spirit animal. Yeah, Ed Norton knocks it out of the park. I love where he goes, did you replace my gin with water? And he just like flips the fuck out. But then he just turns it off. He's like, no, I'm just mad because he get mad on stage. Like, who gives a fuck? It's a warm, you know, what do you call it? Like the warm up
preview.
Like, yeah. It's a preview. Like, who gives a shit? Like, it doesn't, I don't know. There was like a really, I don't know. I think the self-awareness in both the characters written and Edward Norton was really great. Like,
it
really rode that wave like super well.
I suppose we should mention at some point that this is a movie about a washed up actor trying to put on a performance of a Raymond Carver book or short story.
Yeah. What we talk about when we talk about love.
And it's about that. So there's the movie, everybody.
Is it Raymond Chandler or Raymond Carver?
Raymond Carver. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure it's Carver.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he's one of those guys from that old school writer, like, you know, I got to do a fifth of whiskey just to get a word out.
Well, yeah,
know?
What does Edward Norton say? He left his liver on every page, a bit of his liver on every page.
And it's super important to the kind of over pretentious theater vibe that we're living into, that's the one that's chosen. But there's a really, I love that moment. And it's with Michael Keaton where he fakes the story of his dad being an alcoholic,
making
him take his own belt off. He's like, see, I can act too, which that's the part where I'm like, oh, that's the guy I want to see. Like, I want to see that guy more, not, you know,
I don't know. Like, I just don't think that's that character. I just think Reagan is very in his own head and holds everything back. That was his part of his whole issue.
No, it's not holding. It's just, I'm fine. I'm fine with smolder. I'm fine with holding back and just act held back. I don't know.
I don't know what else to tell you. Worked for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you like Short Circuit 2.
There we go.
Asshole.
have you read much?
Short Circuit 2?
Yeah. Have you read the novelization?
Yeah.
Where you really get into Ben Javeri and why they changed his name between the two movies? Have you read any Raymond Carver?
Yeah. I've read that short story. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What did you recognize stuff from the play or anything?
No, not at all. Okay. I mean, I recognize, I remember his stuff being that like overwrought people drinking at a table style, stuff, but like, no, nothing jumped out at me. Yeah. I was impressed. I recognized that Shakespeare thing. That's where I am as somebody with a fucking English degree. I went, ooh, that guy's drunkenly yelling Shakespeare.
It's like there was a certain phrase. I can't recall what it was now. There was a certain phrase that I'm like, oh, I think that's Shakespeare.
Yeah,
like,
when he did the what's the fucking thing? It's Trinity Board, blah, 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 like an idiot with like
sound
like
of fury.
Words filled with sound of fury signifying nothing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, that's that thing from that one, with that guy with the weird neck brace. Yeah. All right.
Speaking of that, cause that whole scene and I think the long takes lend this to it as well. I think the magical realism really works for it because I think the long takes give it sort of a weird dreamlike quality.
Yeah.
In certain places, like that, where you're like, oh, okay, like, why wouldn't this be the case? Like, some of the time jumps that happen that they're able to successfully do, where like the camera's going up the stage, and I forget what she says, but Julie, I think, is his current girlfriend.
Yeah.
It's like, here we go. And you go around the corner, and the play's happening, and they're, you know, and the way like it will sort of like take the point of view of a character. Like, when Edward Norton is talking to Emma Stone, they go downstairs. You're Edward Norton for a split second. Like she looks like she's addressing the camera.
Yeah.
And you just hear his voice. And then all of a sudden he comes out from behind the camera. And I just, I dug that so much.
Yeah. That's the articulate stuff I liked about it. Mm-hmm. Like that level of, I thought the filmmaking was really good. Mm-hmm. I guess I just wanted more from the actual screenplay. Though in those long shots, I can't tell if I'm infuriated or like, hey, I see what you did there. But like, they took the carpet from The Shining. It's in the back of the...
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know if you're allowed to do... Like, are you a good enough filmmaker to do that? I'm like, I believe so, because this is pretty well done, so I'm going to give you that one. But I'm watching you.
Speaking of that, have you seen the trailer for the new Shining sequel?
Dr. Sleep?
Yeah.
No, I knew it was happening.
Though. Yeah, it looks really bad.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean the sequel to The Shining?
And they're trying to recreate some things from The Shining. That's like, again, we've talked about this. Don't make me think of a better movie. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like,
I didn't realize it was that close to being out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's Ewan McGregor, so no thanks. But
I like Ewan McGregor.
It's fine. He's just going to do an American accent, and I hate his American accent.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Danny Torrance moved to London for a while after the events of the Hotel Stanley. And
I picked up a brogue. The Shinnin. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot to say about this movie without sounding like a complete asshole.
Well, that's
to get into too much of like the, I guess I do like sort of that dream, like, I guess going off of that sort of ambiguous stuff is I like that it doesn't, I don't think I can tell you with certainty anything about this movie, any of this movie's point of view. Cause I feel like it rides the line between a lot of things. Like it doesn't, it sort of pokes fun at the whole Hollywood thing. But then it also like is like this theater world is crap too, and pretending that they're all about it, but who gives a shit about them?
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, I think you can come up with your own answer for it. I think, you know, it's designed to do that, to make you think about it. But
well, I think one of the interesting reads you can make of it is this is a pro Hollywood movie, because the only good things that happen are like when he's on the street and people are like, oh my God, you're that guy that brought me all that joy. Mm-hmm. And like the joyous reaction to people on the street. While the people reacting well to the play are like, oh, how thought-provoking. And it's kind of like snooty and pretentious.
Well, what I liked is there's a little cameo by Paul Appel, who's a hilarious writer and comedian. She's great on, I think it was recently canceled, AP Bio. Very, very funny. She's the one that recognizes him in the bar and then asks Edward Norton to take their picture. Because she has no idea who he is.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But then, I mean, I think some of the downside, though, this is not all positive. Some of the downside is like when he's in his underwear running around.
Yeah.
And that one guy's like, give me an autograph. Don't be a dick. You know, yelling at him about, you know, the hoi polloi rather than the respectful theater crowd. But then it's also just there's repeated things to how the Hollywood system and that kind of fame and stuff ruined him. Like was empty and hollow and shitty.
Yeah.
And him sort of fighting against that. That battle in his head of just like, yeah, but it was money and it was good.
Well, here's the quote that makes the film on that point is this is Edward Norton talking to Riggan. He said, this is what you always do. You confuse love for admiration.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought,
well, no, it's his ex-wife saying that.
His ex-wife, Edward Norton. Edward Norton. Yeah. So you confuse love for admiration, mm-hmm. which one, holy crap, does that resonate with me where it's like, you know, my life, I'm pretty lonely. So I'm like, oh, you know what I'll do is I'll do a lot of creative output and write books. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, maybe people will compliment me that way. That'll fill the hole mm-hmm. left by it's like, oh, this is really. But I think that's one of the really strong points of like the theme of the piece, that he tried to fill himself with the Birdman stuff. But mm-hmm. it's just as fake with the Raymond Carver stuff. It doesn't matter how deep or whatever you think it is. It's all just bullshit people reacting to you. So like you're not actually getting love. You're getting admiration. So like right. The real important aspect, the real, you know, story arc is him and his daughter. It has nothing to do with the play. Like well, that's yeah, actually the, yeah.
So much of it is like so much of his conversations with people, like when they're trying to be emotional to him is more just about him. Like he's yeah. just talking about himself and like how important this stuff is and not hearing it. So I think he kind of comes to terms with some of that at the end, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to spend a lot of time talking about the end, but yeah. let's okay. Opening of the film. And I think it's one of the closing shots. What the fuck were those things on the beach?
Jellyfish.
Really? Those look like weird ass jellyfish.
Jellyfish are weird. They're gross looking, particularly if like washed up on the shore.
Oh,
they're just yeah. blobby nonsense.
But they were like red.
Yeah, yeah. Jellyfish can be kind of like that.
I picture kinda... like see-through, like on your way to fight Mother Brain, like those kind of jellyfish.
Those are actually Metroids.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm getting jellyfish confused with Metroids.
Yeah. It's a common mistake.
My mistake. Hey, lead character that game?
Samus Aran.
Woman.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
At the end, you find out it takes the helmet off.
Nintendo's canceled. Putting politics in the games.
Blew my fucking mind later in life. I'm like, oh, wow, you ruined my childhood.
Yeah, this is terrible.
Yes.
Let's recreate it.
Here's some wonderful things about this film. Edward Norton does the weird rapey thing. That's not wonderful, but like it's...
that rule.
No, but there's a wonderful
signed
line.
Alex.
There's a line coming up later. He's like, oh, baby, it'll be great. We'll fuck in front of 800 people. Which one? Is such a Shia LaBeoufy, those like edgelord actors.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Where they're like, no, it's art. It's not, you know, like that. And it's just like, that's so fucking real. Like I've met those people. Like not for me, it's more like edgelord writers where you're just like,
yeah.
I'm going to drink so much and vomit my words on the page. And you're like, oh, shut up.
Oh, no, I can't remember this. There's some performance artist person. I can't think of her name now, but part of her whole thing is like, yeah, sometimes the actors will actually like fuck on stage and she'll like yell at actors in the middle of their performance about how they're not doing it right. Cause it makes it all like real. And it's like, this person just seems awful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where I guess if you're one of the seven people that enjoy that level of art, yeah. Cool. But like, yeah, no, but, so she's all upset. And, one of the other actresses goes back to console her. And this is my favorite line in any movie ever, probably. She's crying. She goes, why don't I have any self-respect? And the lady responds with, you're an actress, honey.
Yeah.
Which is fucking beautiful. And then inexplicably, they make out.
Yeah, that was one part of the movie that I'm like, okay, I don't know if that's supposed to be just, again, this metatextual reference to Naomi Watts and, you know, being an aspiring actress in Mulholland Drive, or if it's just this sort of through line of people looking for love. But whatever was supposed to be there didn't. I don't get, like, you could not have that scene in the movie and it would make no difference.
Yeah, that part threw me.
Yeah, I'm not clear on that.
But the only thing I think of is that supposed to be like a subtle thing that Edward Norton's gay? Because the next scene is him on the roof, or one of the next scenes is him on the roof talking to Sammy.
Yeah.
And he has the conversation that he can't get his dick hard. That's why he'd be afraid to try to hook up with her. Because it's been established that he's having erectile dysfunction, mm-hmm. unless he's on stage. So I wonder if them kind of, not saying like, oh, they're lesbians now because they kissed once. But like, I wonder if that's like kind of like a subtle, like they're in an actor relationship where a lot of times there's.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I took it more as that Edward Norton can't do anything off stage.
I think that's like the main
he's
point.
Such
yeah.
a weird guy that like he's one of those he went so far into being an edgy theater's life kind of thing that
yeah.
But yeah, my generous read of the kissing between the two female leads is that this desperate trying to find love and feeling this sort of humiliation kind of, again, you're an actress, like feeling that kind of vulnerability, humiliation, and someone else can recognize what I'm feeling and finding some kind of connection there. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. It didn't work that well for me.
Also in that scene, Michael Keaton walks in and kind of like grabs her face and says nice things to her. I fucking hate when people grab my face.
Yeah. I'm not,
that's not the, I just, it's so like, alpha-y.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what they're going for. Maybe that's just my reaction to it. But like, that was very awkward.
He's trying to be like kind of paternal or something in that moment. And then, yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah. What do you think about the whole Ed Norton? I don't remember his character's name.
Mike.
Yeah. Mike. That's probably why I forgot. What do you think about the whole Mike and Sammy sexual thing?
It's not good.
No, but I mean, like, as far, it felt like, oh, this is something for them to do, so it's not all Michael Keaton. Like,
I think it's, again, the themes of the movie, like the weirdos looking for love, what we talk about when we talk about love, what does that mean? And also, just to give a little bit, Edward Norton's character a little bit more depth, rather than just being like hotshot weirdo, and give... Emma Stone. Yeah. I mean, give them something to do to not just be like, I'm the put upon daughter.
Yeah.
I'm the, that. So it is. Yeah. I mean, in a way it's not although Michael Keaton is sort of at the center of the movie, it's not just about him.
Yeah, I wish this movie had a better B story. I think that actually would have taken away a lot of my annoyance with Michael Keaton, that if there's like, if a little bit more of the movie had like, was shouldered by more people. Because I think Ed Norton was great. It just it wasn't, he didn't have a strong, like, it's not like he had much of a plot behind, you know, a B plot. Like, I mean, his sword is there. Like, mm-hmm. I almost wish the B plot was the theater critic lady. Because she was, that actress was interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, as little as she had to do, I felt like she brought a lot to it. Like,
yeah, just the absolutely.
Way that, yeah, like, it was like, oh man, I kind of wish she was the
menacing.
B plot.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that'd be fun to follow her. Like, why is she so pissed? Like, that'd be a cool counterpoint to the, you know.
Yeah.
But I loved that bit where Michael Keaton, and I think this is one of the stronger acting parts, where he just goes fucking off on her. He's like, mm-hmm. Well, you're a critic. What is a critic? You write down, these aren't things. These are adjectives. You're just describing. You're not even saying anything. She goes, nuts. And it's like, it's that thing of this build up and this build up. And it's like, he's talking down to her. And she goes, I ain't gonna fucking destroy your play. I'm like, oh, I love that. Like, she did not move a goddamn inch.
Yeah. Well, there's some of that, a couple of times stuff like that happens where, yeah, he's just going through this whole, and some people were saying that is the director speaking through that and how pretentious that was. But to me, that felt very natural coming from Reagan of this, you know, I'm being all theatrical and being all like, you don't know what this is. You don't have the words to describe this. You don't understand like the form and all that stuff. You just are writing these adjectives. I thought it worked in the context of the movie, whether or not that was supposed to be the pretentious director speaking or whatever, it didn't seem out of place for the whole thing.
No, I liked it. I thought it was one of the stronger pieces of it. But it does feel pretentious directory, but it's also you're dealing with a pretentious like lead character. Mm-hmm. So like that's, you know, it's
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It felt natural, and it also felt like not bulletproof. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't like that to me. That wasn't the statement of the movie.
Yeah.
But it's also that bit, like that kind of like huge buildup with her just kind of cutting him down, to me was sort of repeated in towards the end when after the play happens and his moment happens and you get repeated the shots of the jellyfish, the meteor hurtling towards Earth. It all seems like it's building to something and then it just stops.
Well, that's okay. Well, before we get to that, just going back to the theater critic lady, this is the part that didn't sit well with me and it's fine, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But she was way too mad at him.
It was
like, I get the character thought behind it. She doesn't that this is some Hollywood guy swooping in, taking a spot that a real theater person could be. But like, he's his second lead in that play is an actor she loves.
Yeah,
hasn't been an A-list Hollywood guy for 20 years. It feels like there's like a backstory, or maybe did I miss a backstory? Did they
no.
Like, it just felt like there was more there. And again, that's why I kind of wish she had a B plot. Like, I want to know, like, why are you so mad at him?
Like, yeah, like sure. Her, and it's nothing to do with her performance. Her performance was great.
Yeah.
She was as mad as she should have been as that character. It's just not real clear why that character is that mad.
Yeah.
Certainly she's protective of the theater community and stuff like that. And the, yeah, he's this celebrity outsider. He doesn't know true art, but yeah, it's really, it seems slightly unfounded.
Yeah, and he's getting eyes on, like, the whole back and forth with her and Norton, where, like, you ever going to give me a bad review? It's like, only if I give you a bad performance. And, like, there's mm-hmm. almost like a sexiness to them.
Yeah.
So she obviously really likes this guy as an actor. So, oh, wait, you mean that actor I really like is getting more seats in the audience because this Hollywood guy's there? It seems really odd. Like,
well, that's the Hollywood way to look at it. Like, that you're just selling out and doing this crap versus making real art. Like, imagine this person, that character, looking at Broadway now and seeing Beetlejuice the musical. And what's their reaction to that?
Over the fucking moon.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It's great. It's Beetlejuice.
She'd probably be like, this movie's great, great, great. Say it three times. that'd probably be her headline.
She's Rex Reed all of a sudden. No, but it's that he's cheapening the art form of theater.
I get
but
it.
But it is it's still way too angry. But yeah. Theater people are terrible. So what do you want?
I just wanted slightly more because like I liked her as a character. I'm like I wish I knew more about this because I think their interactions are really nice. Here's something that if anything I can say about this movie that's really bad is the fact that I wrote the phrase is Birdman Venom. Because there's a voice in it going like,
you're a dickhead. Like it's... That's the movie's fault, not your brain.
But that is the movie's fault.
Well, actually, but this came out before Venom, so on you.
Here's something that we're skipping by. Two things. One.
Venom.
Massive flub left of the movie, but I love it because it's by him. But Zach Galifianakis, very good in this movie.
Great.
But that one scene, I forget what line he floods, but then he calls him Martin Scorsese.
Yes.
Which is a running Zach Galifianakis joke. But like, he flubbed a line right before that.
Mm-hmm.
But then followed it up with one of his jokes mispronouncing Martin Scorsese. So it's like, oh, this actually, like, I don't know. It like worked. And I love that they kept that in.
It felt sort of natural.
Also, it's probably in the middle of a fucking 15-minute take. And like, we're not fucking doing it again.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, but fucking Galifianakis was great in this. It almost makes me want to have him not be all Galifianakis-y.
Yeah, well, I'm curious. It made me want to watch. He's in a TV show called Baskets that I have not.
Yeah, my friend recommends that.
But like, he can do dramatic stuff. When he's not stuck in the making money in the damn Hangover movies.
Yeah.
He was in this. He was in this little indie movie. I can't remember the name of it now. Where he played like a guy in a
Night at the Museum.
Night at the Museum. What it was. This little unknown movie.
Yeah.
Starring a young Ben Stiller. He's in this little movie. It's kind of a funny story. Not a great movie, but he's very good in it. And like, it's a little bit more of a drama. And I think Baskets has a little bit more like dramedy kind of thing to it. And I think he's very good in that. Like it is. He still brings like kind of some silliness to it, but.
Yeah, I would like to see
him. It's a good energy.
And I don't like Robin Williams, but like I kind of hope his career does the Robin Williams thing where he takes some serious stuff.
Because he kills himself.
Wow. Good one, Alex. Yeah, that was, I don't know how to recover from that.
I don't know. You just slow pitched it in there.
It's like talking to me.
I couldn't just let that sit there.
So. So around now, and not like we're doing this movie in order, but nice little moment with his daughter, where the kind of them starting to reconcile. He goes, I was a shitty father, wasn't I? And I love the response, because this is one of the more human ones. She's like, no, you're fine. I mean, that wasn't the exact phrase, but she was like, no, you weren't shitty. Because like, even when she's talking to Ed Norton about how bad of a dad he was, like, no, he just like tried, he was never there, but then when he tried like really hard. Mm-hmm. And you can get that, I think. Like, you can understand why that would be really annoying and would put a rift between you. But, like, writing that down on paper, it's like, it's not the worst thing ever.
I took that a little bit more as, like, because he's in the midst of all this other shit. Of her being like, I don't want to get into this right now. I took that a little bit more of a – I see what you're saying, and I think there could be some elements of that.
Yeah.
But I think it was a little bit more of a dodge where it's like – I don't want to say anything. I don't want to say anything glowing to you because that's not how I feel, but don't worry about that right now.
Yeah, no, I don't think she was giving the thumbs up saying like,
but no, certainly not.
I liked the response because I think that character, if he were an actual shitty, like a bad father,
right,
that would have been a blow. But he was just like this fair to middling at times, I guess. You were barely there. Like,
yeah. Which I mean, but then like you hear about his backstory with his ex-wife and like he threw a knife at her. And so he couldn't have been all that great.
Be fair. He threw it at his wife and missed.
Oh, I see. Okay. My mistake.
So,
we're grading on a Max Landis curve here. All right.
Yeah. Just pulling from the headlines. I can't remember why he gets. He gets really drunk. Why does that happen?
He gets drunk because the critic tells him, "I'm destroying your play." So it's everything. Everything is kind of like just from heart. He's struggling anyway. This whole thing's kind of falling apart.
Because this is where the kind of odd reality of the film starts, where there's no like this is what happened.
I mean that's from the very beginning when he's floating, but it leans really heavily into that.
No, but I would say, I mean, okay, the floating isn't explained, but all the other kind of him moving the lighter and stuff with his head, like that's explained. Like when like Zach walks in, it's him throwing shit with his hands.
Right.
So like you can see, it's like, no, this is the way that he's viewing it, but it's actually, but this is like where you don't have, you start to not have the contradictory, the Schrodinger
the third
cat
party
thing.
Point
like
of
where like you're not opening the quantum kitty thing and saying the cat's dead or alive. Like we're in a state of we're not sure what happened. So he gets blitzed and wakes up in the morning all fucked up, and Birdman's talking to him, And he's been convinced, basically, by Birdman to get back into it and do Birdman 4. Like, this is the... I mean, they didn't board that, but I mean,
that's essentially... Yeah, yeah, but Birdman's like, this is what you were born to do. Yeah, fuck the play thing.
Exactly, you know, blah, blah, blah. So then he goes up on a roof for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this is the first part of... This is the first of two times you question this. Kills himself?
Well, no. Well, then maybe.
The bystander stops him.
It seemed like that whole thing was sort of a revelation. That was kind of a long dark night of the soul. It's kind of what I took that as. And the Birdman thing was like the big final push of that of like, no, this is what you were meant to be or whatever. But he kind of, he realized how important he was or, you know, like that reignited in him, but less the like, let's just give up and do Birdman. As much as it was like, no, I am great. I'm going to do this damn play. I'm going to show them what's what.
But he did that by taking a running jump off of a roof.
Well, he took a cab, but.
No, show him jumping off a roof.
Yeah, but that was, again, like, I think that was his soul at flight. Like, yeah. I don't think that was his literal. I think he might've been on the rooftop and the guy like talked him down while he was just like standing up there thinking. My favorite part about that is he's standing on the rooftop. Like it's revealed after all of the big Birdman action sequence thing that he's down on the rooftop. And this woman across the way is like, is this real or are you filming a movie? And he just goes, it's a movie. And she's like, you people are full of shit. Yeah. I just love that that's your reaction to seeing a movie being filmed.
It's New York.
Yeah. Do a flip.
Yeah, the soul in flight thing is, this is part of the thing I don't like about the film is, in order for that to work, he wouldn't be going into a performance where he tries to kill himself during it.
But I guess maybe soul of flight isn't the right thing, but like he has made a decision at that point. Like he is free from this struggle now. He is no longer concerned about or as concerned about the Birdman element of it is that he's like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to leave my mark this way. I don't know. It's
no, I mean, I guess you can read it that way. It feels like a clunky metaphor. It's like my metaphor for deciding to kill myself is killing myself.
I guess I'm not seeing what you're saying. What do you mean metaphor?
Well, he runs and jumps off a building.
Yeah, to fly.
No, but what I'm saying is people can't fly.
Get out of town.
So the metaphor for him deciding that he can kill himself is killing himself. No, but I mean, he's still running. We're watching him run and jump off a building.
Right.
In a universe where men can't fly.
So you write magical realism, and this is confusing for you.
But no, it's not confusing. I think it's clunky. I'm shitting on it. I'm saying that's
what, I don't understand. Why is it clunky?
Because if you're leading towards suicide,
mm-hmm.
why would you
Was he leading towards suicide?
Well, yeah, I mean, he shoots himself in the next...
No, at that moment, on the building.
No, but if he wasn't, then that doesn't make any sense.
He's standing on a building looking at the city and then takes flight.
No, he doesn't take flight. He gets talked down and then turns around and runs. And yeah, fine, takes flight. But like, he's doing that to get to a performance where he's going to blow his brains out.
Uh-huh.
Like, I guess
maybe the point is that it's not that he's killing himself. It's the art part of it.
Yeah. It's just, let's do it. It could have been done more gracefully. It'd be like, foreshadowing, like if at the beginning of The Sixth Sense, they go, you know, sometimes the ghosts don't know their people. Like, let's say, for instance, one time this guy gets shot in the stomach by one of his patients, but
do you want him to sit there and like go like, and then an idea pops up, a light bulb goes
he could be on street level and start floating would be fine.
Okay.
It's the metaphorical suicide to lead to suicide. It's like, oh, that's clunky.
But he does. Like, he's on the street level. To you, the viewer, what you see is he flies up to the top of that building.
Yeah.
Then, fine.
I don't want the jumping off the building part. That's fine. Just the flying up to the building would be fine. Uh-huh. It's the jumping off part after having a good bystander just basically go, suicide's bad. That's the part I don't like that as the lead in to the performance aspect of suicide. It's a clunky metaphor for it or a clunky symbolism, whatever you want to refer to.
I disagree. I just don't think it's clunky. I don't understand what's clunky about it, but it's not something we're going to hash out here. I mean, the flying is weird, certainly, but I don't know. I never took that at any moment as this is him trying to kill himself.
Yeah, I thought that was the point to the way, like, I mean, him, he drank himself. I mean, so much to the point that I wasn't sure if he woke up from the drunk. I mean, that's, you know, one of the other ways to read it is because that's where we're completely detached from reality, you know, because that's where now you can fully see Birdman on the streets where everybody else is watching. Mm-hmm. That's where he can snap his fingers and have, which I love the mecha bird monster, and making kind of Avengers-esque noises, which I like. I like how much this movie shits on Avengers, by the
way.
Yeah, like early in the movie where Robert Downey Jr. is talking about doing stuff, Birdman's like, that guy's not even half as fucking talented as you. Yeah. That should be you up there.
Well, and that everyone he wants as an understudy is involved in a franchise movie, basically.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I love it. And they make fun of Hawkeye, Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner, yeah.
No, he's an Avenger.
That guy? Yeah.
Yeah. So he flies slash takes a cab to the performance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how much I like him blowing his nose off.
Now that is, I took that as to be like, not the goal. Like I think.
Oh no, I didn't think that was the goal. It just feels like, I mean, I guess it's fine.
I don't know if it's supposed to be like shooting off your nose to spite your face or, you know.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how to read that. It just feels like, I mean, there's a certain amount of, and this is just me having suicidal ideation, but like there's a certain amount of, you wake up in the morning after taking pills and a lot of vodka and go, I can't even kill myself, right? Like, there's, like, a patheticness to it where it's, like, I feel like he would have aimed... Like, I mean, this is his moment of triumph. How the fuck do you miss... I just felt like a...
Because
like
I kind of took it also as that, like, that he knew as a performer, perhaps, and this is me just running wild on it, but that this was, like, he knew he had that, like, that he had the audience, that this was going good. Like, he had that sense. And so that's like, but I want to do this, but... I don't know. This is going really well. Like maybe I am worth it.
It is not a bad read.
It's that last minute. Like, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah. It's not a bad read that his hand just turned that last moment because he was enjoying himself. Yeah. Cause that feels weird though. I do like what it leads to. Cause, in the bedroom, in the hospital room, one, I love Zach being so excited.
Yes.
It's like, it's so beautiful. And the ex-wife being like, you asshole. And like, there's this like push and pull of like, he nearly died, but he's like, no, my best friend's alive and he's really popular.
Yeah, well, because the whole time, like Zach Galifianakis, he has been like running the show, but there has been an element of concern for him.
Yeah.
And just like, well, we need the show to happen because the money is kind of a thing, but like, I think you're kind of going, I don't know. But then it's like, oh, you shot yourself and this rules. Thank you. Yeah.
Which I think that's a beautiful moment. I love the daughter and him kind of reconciling or whatever you want to call it. Maybe not reconcile, but like, dropping their guards for a minute, holding hands, whatever. But also, I think it's probably super obvious, but I like it. It's how Birdman he looks after he shoots his nose. Because like one, the mask he has on the surgical gauze is kind of Birdman-esque, but then his nose is blown up to be almost like a beak-like proportion.
Yeah,
and the kind of side profile looks like the Birdman poster. It's just like Like, it's on the nose, but that's a really good on the nose. Like, I like that. But so that leads to, the Birdman in costume taking a shit.
Yes.
Mwah.
Yeah.
That's up there with Los Logos.
Yeah. And then as he's leaving, I don't know who says it. I can't tell whose voice this is supposed to be. But he says, like, so long and fuck off, basically, as he's exiting the bathroom. Someone mutters that. And I'm not sure if that's supposed to be Riggan saying it to Birdman or Birdman saying it to Riggan.
I don't know either. That's a good question.
Yeah.
But then he goes to the window and jumps out, presumably.
Mm.
And this is the big question of the film. So then the daughter runs up and goes, Dad, where the fuck? He looks in the bathroom. He's not there. Looks out there. Looks down, saying like, oh, fuck, he killed himself. Mm. Then looks up. Eyes light up. Smiles. Cuts to black.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I know what to feel about that ending.
Sure.
I mean, I know that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm left in want, but like, I think maybe I wanted either maybe less.
Mm.
I don't know. Maybe just her running to the window. It's just that there's something like that sits weird, and maybe that's what they want.
I think it's like you were saying before, like so much of this, the getting unmoored from like what actually is going on.
Yeah.
I think to me, kind of how I read it, I guess this is one reading, not necessarily the one I'm fully convinced of. Is that it's this sort of weird flight of fancy again of him processing that his daughter may actually like him. You know what I mean? That she can see the him that he thinks he is.
I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. There's like, that's like the self-esteem.
The looking up and seeing him and being like, oh my gosh, my dad actually is this amazing thing.
Yeah. Like that. What was the thing before? Like, the confusing love for admiration where like he's actually feeling like actual love.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, that's for most of the movie, we are kind of grounded in a certain kind of reality. Is it just he kills himself? I mean, it's obviously like it's not meant to be answered. Like,
yeah,
it's one
yeah,
of those.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the fundamental problems I have with the film. And I enjoyed the film for the most part, other than I think Michael Keaton's a little miscast. I think I want a little bit more magical realism earlier in the film to kind of.
I thought they peppered it through enough throughout. Like it gets a little samey in terms of him controlling things.
That's sort of what I mean. It's like maybe have enough. I don't know what the other thing would be.
Yeah, but like I think it has to be though, because it is so much of his magical realism is his view of it and him controlling things.
Yeah.
And so like him, because I mean him potentially trying to murder that guy with a stage light, you know, he's convinced that he did that.
That's true.
You know, but it is, but like you forget that because so much other stuff is going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I can see what you're saying. And to some degree I do agree. But I'm not sure what that would be.
Here's the
thing. That all rhymed, by the way.
Here's the thing we skipped over. What was the deal with the cocktail napkin?
That's what got him into acting?
Yeah. Is that that's real? Just like Raymond Carver was watching
apparently,
watching some community theater in Syracuse, New York.
Yeah, I mean it was you know, in theory, the 50s or whatever. Like, the internet wasn't invented.
No, it just felt like Twitter. I think there's a lot of this movie where I felt like there was more to be read into it. And maybe there is, and I'm just missing it. But it's like, that felt like there should be, either I'm missing something or there should have been more there. Like, it just feels like there, like.
I don't know. I think there's plenty there. Because you have this guy, like, his whole foundation for like I want to be this actor is based on like doing this theater thing, and then Edward Norton is like, yeah, he was drunk, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And it's just that like what your dreams are and what the reality is might be two different things.
But I mean keep in mind, I guess so, but I mean Edward Norton literally was drunk during the character was drunk when saying that, so I didn't take that as too much
in vino veritas, baby.
That I just felt like maybe there was something, because when he talks to the critic, doesn't he like put that down and she puts her drink on it?
And he starts talking about it and she's like, I don't care. And then he, at the end of their whole interaction, he takes a big drink and just puts it on there and then walks out.
Yeah.
Because he's just crushed.
Yeah.
He's like, this doesn't fucking matter anymore.
It's fine. I want more, like, I don't know. There's just something about like, he didn't even know who that lady was. And I guess that does work with the character, like, you know, 2 days ago and now all of a sudden.
Yeah. This is who he needs approval from.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it works. It just, it discounts that napkin, which makes me go back to, well, does that mean something else? Like, does he have a stack of them somewhere? Because that seems like a very actory thing to do. Like, he has a stack of napkins that he claims that Raymond Carver signed. Because how do you keep a napkin that pristine on you at all times?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a small, but it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it just felt like there should have been another angle there.
I don't know that it needs to be more than what it is.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted this movie. I think the problem is just not everybody, but this movie was so highly spoken of that I wanted it to be more.
You felt it was a victim of its own hype.
Yeah, partially. I mean, also, I think if I saw it clean, I think I would have a lot of the same problems, but like it was added to that this was supposed to be this was like an important movie. You know?
Yeah, I think it was one of the best films of that year.
Yeah, I don't remember what else came out that year. But let's just say you're right.
Sure.
I mean, it's not bad. It's certainly not bad. Like, I'm not, it's, I think the problem is I'm judging it in like kind of a rarefied air instead of judging it as like just a movie.
Yeah.
I
understand. I think that's a fair way to look at it.
Yeah.
But it is one of these things that you could also look at it from the viewpoint of like, this was a thing that was in theaters, you know, the same way that like Twin Peaks season 3 has its issues, but you can be like, they put this on television. That's crazy.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah.
That doesn't forgive it for everything, but sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially, yeah. And it's ballsy to have, you know, basically a movie it's a movie that's shit on the Avengers.
Right.
Which is pretty.
Now, have you seen much of his other work? I've seen, I have not seen all of Children of Men.
Children of Man, I like
a lot. Seen bits of. I've never seen Babel or
Babel. I haven't seen
Beautiful or I've seen 21 Grams a long time ago, and I remember thinking that was kind of pretentious nonsense.
I've only seen Children of Men, which I thought was really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I started watching it one time late at night, fell asleep, and then I never went back to it.
There's only a couple spots in that movie I don't like, which I'm not going to go into because we're not watching it. But like, there's like a jump scare that happens there that I hate jump scares. And it's just there for that, and it's just fuck you. Many things will turn me off a movie more than that. But that's on my top 10 things to turn me off from a movie
jump scares.
Fucking why are we? Ugh, whatever.
They got you.
Yeah.
But as it is, an Andrea Riseborough movie, I have to give it thumbs up because this is a Andrea Riseborough support podcast because she's a fantastic actress.
I don't know who that is.
That's Mandy.
Oh, yeah. Just call her Mandy.
Or I could use the actress's name.
Yeah, but then I'm not going to know who you're talking about. The other thing, what was it with the meteors? I missed that too.
That I don't have a clear read on. I couldn't give that an answer. I mean, obviously, in the Birdman thing, it's just supposed to be an action thing. But in the beginning and the end,
that's what I mean. The beginning and the end.
I don't know what that is supposed to be. I don't know if that's supposed to be like his world coming to an end. I don't know if that's supposed to be his approaching realization. I do not have a clear read on that.
See, I was thinking that's like much like Howard the Duck was sucked onto the down to planet Earth from his planet. Mm-hmm. That's a Birdman guy.
He was sucked on planet Earth too by Leah Thompson.
Hey-o!
Sorry.
It's true. They had sex with each other.
So gross.
Oh, my little ducky. Yeah, go watch Birdman. It's a very enjoyable movie. Just don't think it's going to be top AFC top 100. You know?
I say do think that. Only think that.
If you want to not like the movie that much, say what John.
Only think.
Say what John says.
Don't.
Me words use. Birdman. Oh, best part of the movie is Michael Keaton walking down, reconnected with Birdman, and then Michael Keaton staring kind of dead at camera, just going, ah!
Yes.
Doing the Birdman call.
Yeah.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Some good stuff.
That's worth all of the...
It was worth the price of admission. And that's what I'm talking about when I say this is the best movie.
Yes. Edward Norton's boner and Michael Keaton.
Wait, what happened to his hair? Now it's just his boner?
Oh, you know, you can't just be hair.
That's true. That's true.
All right, John. Wait, do you smell that?
Is it what The Rock is cooking?
No. Smell that, Gelfling.
I can't finish. I don't know how that. Goes.
It's literally the only part of the movie I remember.
Okay.
That's the Dark Crystal.
Okay.
Which we're watching now.
Oh, good.
I know at some point somebody says smell like Gelfling.
Okay, cool.
So that might not even be the line, but
the only thing I remember is, that's it. Is the Skeksis doing that thing.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Yeah,
the Chancellor or whatever.
The Exchequer. The Exchequer of the Skeksis. So we're going to watch The Dark Crystal, the 1982 Jim Henson Company movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's about Gelflings. It's got Jim Henson. It's got Frank Oz. And they're going to be making... Well, they're not making. They already made an animated... Not an animated series. A puppinated series.
Puppinated?
A puppinated series coming out on Netflix in next month, August, I think.
Yeah. What's it called? Like Dark Crystal : Ascension or something?
Yeah, I don't know. It's supposed to be the prequel of like what happens to lead to the events of this movie.
That was me actually being interested. I'm sorry. That sounded like I was doing that impression again.
The problem, this is the long way around of what just happened. I was trying to figure out who you sound like, and then like, oh yeah, you sound like every Frank Oz character.
Yeah.
Because that's Miss Piggy, that's Yoda. That's uh-huh. They're all like,
you know. He's a man of many ranges.
Yes. That one voice. So yes, The Dark Crystal, it's available probably everywhere. Who the fuck knows? I didn't look into it. It's got a 7.2 rating on IMDb.
Whoop, whoop.
Yes. Remember to go to stitcherpremium.com, use promo code STUFF. You can find my Patreon, patreon.com/AlexBolin, Alex Bolin with two X's. Do that.
And the reason we watched this movie, Birdman, is it was suggested to us on the Facebook page. So get on there and suggest other movies for us to watch. Or just drop by and say hi.
Yes, that's true. Do those things. All right. Bye.
Bye.